In this extraordinary edition of Grok the Talk, two great minds come together to shed some much-needed light on the now decade-old horror known as 911. Dr. Judy Wood, with a B.S. in civil engineering, an M.S. in engineering mechanics, and a Ph.D. in materials engineering science, and her vast experience and expertise in biomimicry, interferometry, and over 60 technical publications, brings her professionally skilled eye to the forensic analysis of what happened on that fateful day. It is not an overstatement to say that her book, Where Did the Towers Go?, is one of the most important books of our time. You can access the wealth of information that she has made available at drjudywood.com. And her book, which is the definitive forensic analysis of 911, can be purchased at, and this is all in lowercase letters, wheredidthetowersgo.com. John Lash is a renowned comparative mythologist, often referred to as the worthy successor of Joseph Campbell. His book, Not in His Image, is perhaps the most liberating book that one can ever have the pleasure of reading. His unparalleled expertise in the study of world mythology and the Gnostic tradition plays a key role in helping to unravel the stories and the psyops that were embedded into the very fabric of 911. His website is a veritable online university and is a treasure house of knowledge and instruction. One of his greatest accomplishments is his restoration of the sacred story of Gaia Sophia, which recounts the origin of the Earth and the human species from the galactic core. His website can be accessed at metahistory.org. And of course, my series of Planetary Tantra Talks, now 15 in number, along with the two-hour Sophia Myth interview, can be downloaded here at Grok the Talk. So it is with great honor that I present this all-important talk on the puzzle wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in a puzzle, known as 911. So as usual, sit back, get centered, and relax, because here we go. Okay, and welcome to a very, very special edition of Grok the Talk here on the 10th, I hate to use the word anniversary, but the 10th anniversary of the horrendous events of 911. I would like to start out, before I bring John and Dr. Wood on the line, to say that I have spent countless hours with both of these two wonderful people, and I can say that outside of my Aikido teachers here in Japan, they are the two people I respect most in the world. They're two giants of the intellect, of the intuitive perspective, and in a very unique ability to see with innocence and to see things out of the box. And in addition to all that, they've both been extremely professional, good-mannered, and impeccably good friends to have. So kind of going around the clock here, I'm here at 6 a.m. in the morning, and next on the dial is Dr. Wood at 4 p.m., and John Lash in Spain at 11 p.m. So, Dr. Wood, you're kind of sandwiched in here by two Gaian warriors, and it is my honor, and I'm sure John's honor, to stand by your side. So if you could both kind of chime in here and just say a couple opening words. First, Dr. Wood.
Thanks. It's 5 p.m. here.
5 p.m., okay.
I was actually thinking about that, how remarkable our technology is, that you picture a globe and where these points are around the planet. Pretty amazing. South Carolina in the United States, in Spain, and in Japan. That's pretty widespread. And it seems like we're all in the same place.
Indeed. It's a very nice connection. Very nice. And John?
Yeah, it is remarkable that we can do this. And, of course, we are having a discussion today about a subject that does concern the entire planet. So we're lucky that we have the opportunity to connect for that discussion, even though we're geographically in very different places.
Indeed, indeed. So we're going to cover some very heavy subjects today. Here at the outset, I would like to read a brief statement, and it goes like this. On 911, over a half a mile of vertical building height containing nearly 150 football fields of floor space was reduced to a near-level field of dust and debris, where rescue workers walked horizontally or rappelled into empty caverns to look for survivors. How was this possible, given the standard laws of engineering and physics? The 9/11 Commission report bypassed this central issue, as did the report of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. Contrary to its stated objective of determining why and how World Trade Center 1 and 2 collapsed, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, made the stunning admission that it did not investigate how the towers fell. Neither the standard view that the Twin Towers collapsed from fire, nor the standard opposition view that they were intentionally detonated by thermite explosives, explain the evidence, nor do they follow the laws of engineering and physics. All right, so today we are going to be considering the scientific evidence of the destruction and the psyops that was perpetrated together, the psychological destruction, with Dr. Wood focusing on the former and John Lash on the latter of mixing and matching. All right, so to begin with, I want to get one thing right out here, out in the front and out in the open and clear it up, and that is, Dr. Wood, I would like to get a disclaimer from you about Richard C. Hoagland and how he has claimed that he was in contact with you and had your permission to use your work.
I've never corresponded with him. He's never talked with me on the phone or in person. I've never met him in person. Never emailed between us. So that can't be the case. And one thing I would like to add is, and anyone who knows me knows how meticulous I am about details, if someone else presents my work, chances are they're not going to get it right. They're going to misrepresent it. And then people repeat what they say, and it keeps getting, you know, distorted further on down the line, like that children's game of rumors. You know, you tell one person something, and by the time it gets around the circle, it's something completely different. So it's important to start from the source. And this is something I've been working on for a number of years, getting suppressed by others. And so it leaves me very uncomfortable when what I say is suppressed and then somebody else pretends to represent it. It's unethical, actually, to present someone else's research because of that very issue.
Indeed, yes. And if he was so supportive of you, he should have just asked that you come and do the presentation, of course.
I agree. So I don't know, you know, why things happen the way they do, but so be it.
Indeed. Okay, I'm glad to get that out in the open. And one more point on that is on his Facebook, people have claimed when I post things there that I am actually you. So we've heard two different voices speaking at the same time. So know that this is Thomas Malone in Japan and Dr. Wood in the States. So we are two separate people. All right. Okay, so that's out of the way.
And I don't go to Facebook. I figure there's enough data collected on me. I don't go to Facebook because I'm afraid that that's what it's all about.
Indeed it is. All right. So let's go ahead and get into the heart of things here. Now, you've been interviewed countless times, Dr. Wood, on the net, so we have the evidence out there in the open, and of course your book and your website. So today I don't want to go too deeply into the evidence per se. I want to take this into something a little bit more than a 911 1.0. So I want to start this out with the first question for both of you. Why is the truth movement so afraid of your work, Dr. Wood? And could you take the first answer, please?
Well, it's someone pointed out recently that, you know, there's no reason to try to debunk someone unless you have something to lose, like if you have a particular agenda. If you're in search of the truth, nothing should fear you. Nothing should cause you to be afraid of it. And it is quite puzzling why, you know, I seem to be the enemy. And I'm not in the truth movement. I'm not competing with anybody. I'm just looking for the truth. And the truth doesn't have sides. It isn't divisive. If everyone's aiming for the truth, everyone should be on the same page and going in the same direction. So it should be actually unifying instead of divisive.
Indeed. And so what would be the fear factor in their perspective?
I can only guess at a couple of things. One is, you know, it's this agenda they're taught, and folks, after they're taught something, you know, first impressions stick, they have their emotions invested in it. Once they have their emotions invested in it, they don't want to give it up. They feel like they own it somehow, and it becomes a territorial thing. Or they were involved in the agenda. I think most of the people in the truth movement are just following leaders, you know, playing follow the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And so it only takes a few leaders to start steering things astray. And what I like to ask people is, you know, whoever planned 9/11, do you think it just slipped their mind and they forgot to plan a cover-up? You know, of course they would plan a cover-up. So what would the cover-up look like? You know, there are going to be people asking questions and poking around. What do you do with those people? You round them up and contain them. Keep them out of trouble. And you also train them to attack anyone who is speaking the truth. Because
mm-hmm.
then you can keep that from being heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, more effort might go into the cover-up because it's a much longer ongoing process than the actual event itself.
Right. It has to last forever. Or until the clock runs out.
Right. The cover-up is designed to last for the very long term, and I hope that in the course of this conversation we'll get to look again, but perhaps from an entirely different point of view so far, as to what exactly the cover-up is, you know? So we'll get to that, Thomas, I think, because it's in the notes, but if I just might add a brief comment to what Dr. Wood has said. I think that there are a lot of people in the truth movement who are not afraid of her work and who would respond very positively to it. When we talk about the truth movement, I think we have to make a clear distinction between all those people who want to know the truth about 9/11, which includes me and you too as well.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants to know what really happened at 9/11, how it was done, who did it, and why, is part of the truth movement. Everyone who acknowledges that the official story of Muslim hijackers is a lie is part of the truth movement. The problem is not with people in the truth movement in general. The problem is with the designated leaders of the truth movement. They're the ones that are very much afraid of Dr. Wood's work. And there are any number of reasons for that being so. I'll just point out two, which I consider to be glaringly obvious. First of all, the evidence that she presents and the case she builds on that evidence for what happened in terms of science at 9/11, at Ground Zero, is irrefutable.
Mm-hmm.
And they are terrified of her evidence and her argument because they cannot refute it. They cannot, in a fair argument, refute what she says. And her evidence clearly refutes the thermite theory of controlled demolition. So that's one reason why they're afraid. Another reason why they're afraid is because the designated leaders, that would be Gage and Jones, and the people who have clustered around them, have been hideously duped. And either they are pure dupes who've been caught in the psyops of 9/11, or they are accomplices and accessories to that psyops. I couldn't really say. But they're either one or the other. And in that case, they certainly are afraid of anybody or anything who would expose that dupery. And so I think they're not just afraid. I think, if you'll pardon the illusion, to this term, they're in terror. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they have good reason to, be. So that's my comment on why they're afraid of Dr. Wood's work.
Indeed. Dr. Wood, would you like to add to that?
Yes, that, I was looking at some various definitions. In various techniques that they try to cover it up, they don't want anyone to look at my book. My book is pure empirical evidence, and it leads to a conclusion that's conclusive evidence. And so how do you cover that up? You call it a theory. You call it a theory, then you can say, oh, there's no evidence that supports her theories and speculation. They call it theories. It's a favorite one. And I'd like to ask if by theory they mean speculation, because there's no speculation in my work. I build a case on evidence like a detective solving a crime. What I present is conclusive evidence, and being conclusive evidence, it puts an end to the debating by reason of irrefutability. That's what the meaning of the word conclusive is. Serving, by Webster Dictionary, serving to put an end to all debate and questioning. And so if my evidence puts an end to all the debate and questioning, then what can they do with it? The party's over.
That's right. The party's over in terms of speculation, but the real party begins in terms of getting to the truth. And I couldn't agree with you more, Dr. Wood, that truth unifies. When people accuse you of causing division in the 9/11 movement, that is absolutely ridiculous and irrational, and it's slanderous and deceptive, because you have produced pure evidence, and the pure evidence leads us to the truth, and the truth is what we all come together on. So it's 10 years down the road now, and it's time to see if we can come together on 9/11 in the truth and not in speculations and theories. The moment has come to see if we can do that. And that's why we're having this three-way conversation this evening, isn't it?
Yes. One thing I'd like to add is that my definition of truth movement is more of this, group, because of how I've come to know it. I think there's truth seekers, and they're individuals, and they organize. The organization I refer to as the truth movement, but that's a definition difference.
No, I follow that distinction.
Who knows what it means?
Right, I follow that distinction there. But there are many truth seekers who are quite willing to look at your work and who are impeded by doing so by the designated leaders of the truth movement. And this is a situation that's got to give and got to break, and is breaking as we speak.
Yeah, it's funny that you use the word break there, because I had written in my notes that Dr. Wood's book is kind of like a dam break. And once this book got out last December, it's flooded some of the little boats out there on the lake that were trying to hang on to this group, this truth movement. And Dr. Wood, you've relayed to myself and other people that you're seeing a lot of people jumping boat, in a sense, coming over and saying, hey, you were right.
Right. It's irrefutable. They can't find anything wrong with it. Well, you can't if it's evidence. It's pure evidence. And there's been a lot of, I've kind of casually referred to them as defectors, who are leaving the organized truth movement and realizing they've been duped. They've been led down a blind alley down a dead-end street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how cover-ups, I think, work.
That is indeed how cover-ups work, yes.
That's right.
People are led into confusion, and then they're offered false solutions. This is how the PSYOPs operates. There's an enormous PSYOPs around 9/11, and it's beginning to dawn on me now, as I've been paying closer and closer attention to Dr. Wood's work, that on the scientific foundation that she's provided for the evidence of what was done and how it was done, from that foundation, we can start to look at the PSYOPs that was built around it and start to deconstruct and break down the PSYOPs. And, of course, doing that is a matter of great interest to me, because my area of knowledge is not science as such, but is mythology, which deals with narratives and belief systems and the construction of narratives and myths. So that's my specialty, and so I find the challenge, which is now before us, to deconstruct the psyops of 9/11 to be extremely exciting, and I think it's we're on the threshold, we could be on the threshold of a tremendous breakthrough for humanity. This is a very, very crucial moment.
I totally agree. I sense a big change is just happening in the past few days, even. And it seems like the wind has just changed directions.
Indeed. And I will add one more point there before we go into the next question. The focus now in the alternative, the opposition theory, is that nanothermite or thermite was used. And as that's losing its appeal, they're starting to bring in the mini nukes and the torsion Nazi whatever ideas of a torsion field weapon. So be on the lookout for these new ploys that are coming up as well.
If they can keep a whole bunch of things juggling in the air at the same time, like balls, just have a whole bunch of stuff churning around, you're bound to have something that's going to appeal to someone, but it'll also give the appearance that the answer is unknown. And as long as that is convincing enough to enough people, they don't keep looking. Like, sigh, we'll never find out what really happened. Might as well quit looking. Let's move on. That's part of the objective as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But realizing that the truth is knowable and known to those who have looked for it.
Yes, truth is knowable. This is a standard from my understanding from the pagan world, which is based on where morality was based on the concepts of honesty, honor, and truth, which is not the morality that rules in our world today. But I think, Dr. Wood, you're absolutely right. Again, you have a very savvy understanding because you've looked at this so closely, not only the scientific aspect, but you've also looked at the other aspects of it, obviously, the psyops. You understand that the psyops worked by just wearing people down, you know, and it has been very effective, and they eventually just want to give up and say, well, we can never know. But then on the other hand, I see a current playing against that that's even stronger, especially in the last month and as you say, even in the last few days. And that is the current of outrage, of just being sick and tired of being lied to and deceived, you know? And behind that outrage, there is a desire to know the truth. So I think that it's a war between these two things. Can the psyops prevail? Can it wear people down? Can it confuse and divide people until the end of time, you know? Or is our natural, honorable desire for the truth going to rise up and make a difference? And I can't call it, but we're right on the knife edge right now.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Indeed. All right. We could go on this thread for quite some time as well, but let's go ahead and jump into more of the heart of the matter, in a sense. So the subtitle of your book is that evidence of directed free energy technology on 911. So for some people, that might be kind of difficult to understand. What is the connection between the use of this as a weapon, an obvious weapon that took the lives of almost 3,000 people and destroyed, you know, a huge section of New York City, and that connection with free energy used as a positive technology? Could you kind of clarify that connection for us?
Yes. In the early days of this, I was, attacked. Well, I've always been attacked, but I was attacked, and folks would say, well, there's not enough energy on the planet. It would take five times the Earth's output of energy in order to destroy the towers. Well, why aren't the towers there then? Obviously, that energy came from somewhere. You know, the towers are gone. That's something that is undeniable to anyone. Well, were they there to begin with? Well, I've been up to them. I've touched them in 1976 and 75. So I know that they were there then, and they're not there now. That's a lot of mass to go away. And so we do know that they went away. And you start looking at more of how they went away, it becomes very revealing. What it, you know, as I say, the towers didn't burn up, nor did they slam to the ground. They turned into dust in midair. And I know that because of the lack of seismic signal, the lack of appropriate size of debris pile, mm-hmm. and the lack of a broken bathtub, which mm-hmm. would have allowed Manhattan to be flooded.
And I would just add the vast amount of dust that was created, that was observed.
Exactly. And there's this dust all over the place. But dust came from someplace, and we don't see any, you know, much of any building remnants. So instead of the molecules being attracted to each other, they were repelling each other. That is a change in the molecular basis of matter. I mean, that's affecting that. It's unleashing this unbelievable energy from somewhere. So it's obviously tapped into a way of getting energy, but is often referred to as free energy. And it's my understanding that Nikola Tesla wanted to give the world free energy about 100 years ago, but was afraid to for fear it would fall into the wrong hands and that it would be used for evil purposes.
Hmm.
Well, been there, done that. It's mm-hmm. It's happened. So that risk is no longer there. It can be used for good now.
Right, or you could say that the risk that Tesla foresaw, and he should have known, because if we credit him with being a valid scientist who did actually discover this energy, the risk that he foresaw has been demonstrated, okay? And yet there's an enormous irony in that, because in the very fact that the risk of weaponized free energy that Tesla feared has been demonstrated, it also demonstrates that it is real, that free energy as such is a real feasible technology. And so as horrible as it is, as horrible as the events of 9/11 are, they do carry that message. They do declare undeniably to the entire planet that this free energy physics and the technology that goes with it is possible and actually exists today. And so then the responsibility falls on us, who want a peaceful world, to say, we must claim this. We must claim this for the good of the world and for benevolent uses in society. So the challenge of 9/11 is not merely to find out who did it, to understand the evil behind it, and we must face that challenge, but it's also to open to that fantastic opportunity that it showed us, albeit in a most horrific manner.
Right. There's other aspects of it as well. In the cover of my book, you know, called Where'd the Towers Go? Because the towers are gone. But where did the towers go? There's a picture of the North Tower just frothing up into dust. You look at that picture, and you know, anyone who saw that and who looks at the cover picture, you're right, it's undeniable to anyone on the planet. You hear so many people claiming to have developed a free energy device, and then you later hear that they suicided themselves or something else happened. It never gets out on the market because there's one or two people, and then there's various campaigns designed to discredit them, and round it goes. But this event, it's plain as day to anyone who looks. That it's right there. It's, you know, you don't need to question, does it work or not? Well, are the towers there? It's as certain as the towers are gone.
That's right. That's right. And that means that it's as certain as the towers are gone and the manner in which they disappeared. When we really look at it, when we really go back and look at the photographs and even go look at the film clips, although we must be careful of the hoaxing and the rigging of those film clips. But when we go back and look at what appears to be a demolition, what appears to be buildings falling into the ground, with your evidence, we really see that they didn't fall at all. And we can see it with our own eyes now when we go revisit that. And that is such an awakening. It has been to me, and I know it is to more and more people all the time. Because if we can see that energy demonstrated destructively right in front of our eyes, just imagine what could be done with it if it were turned to peaceful purposes. It's really breathtaking, and it's really the positive side of 9/11 that has been, I think that's been one of the side effects of your book, because it brings up the free energy issue, is that it has pointed us to the positive side of this horrific event, and done so in a way that's really exciting. You know, unfortunately, I just want to say this about the 9/11 truth movement, the Thermite Gang, and those who claim that the buildings collapsed into their own footprint at free fall speed due to planted demolitions. Those of you who are listening to this interview who have found credibility in that theory, just go and look at the pictures, some of the pictures in Dr. Wood's book. Look at the coring out of building WT6. Look at some of the anomalous effects that occurred at Ground Zero that day. It's true that WTC-7 fell later in the afternoon, and it looks like it fell. It looks like the walls fell. But look at the picture. There's no debris of 47 stories of WTC-7. There's no debris. The walls were like an empty shell that just dissolved and descended at the final moment. But there's no debris pile there. There's a few girders and a little heaps of this and that. There's no office furniture. There's no tables. There's no filing cabinets. Nothing. So
it didn't even spill across the street all the way.
Didn't spill across the street to any other buildings, and it didn't even make a seismic signal equivalent to quarry explosions that occurred in the same day in a different state. So this is irrefutable evidence, and what's really exciting about this evidence is that it shows the existence of a technology that belongs to humanity and needs to be claimed back for humanity in one way or another. I can't say I know how we're going to do that, but the first step is to admit that it's there and stop pretending that it never existed and could never have been invented. And also, stop listening to the physicists and scientists who come out and tell us point blank in an authoritative manner that free energy physics and free energy technology is impossible.
That's the big point, isn't it? Before 2001, we people who believed there was free energy technology available but didn't have the conclusive evidence. It was always a vague feeling in your mind. Now, all you got to do is look at it. That's it. That's the biggest proof you're ever going to get, that it exists, and it exists on a very big scale.
That's
500
right.
Years, 500 years ago, people probably said electricity was just fictitious. I don't know why it wasn't around 500 years ago. Probably was. It just got hidden again. But the issue of electricity and magnetism interacting. I think we've all done this as a small child. Get a wire and wrap it around a nail, plug it into a 9-volt battery, and you turn that nail into a magnet.
Mm-hmm.
And how hydroelectric power plants work is moving a conductor through a magnetic field produces electricity. Voila, out of nowhere, it seems. Yeah, there is motion involved, but turning a rotating magnet into electricity along a wire, that just seems like magic.
But it's elementary physics. And I'm sure that when we know, when it's taught in universities and when it's disclosed to the world at large, what are the laws and formulas of free energy physics, it will also be elementary. Because it has to be based in the most fundamental and simple laws of the universe. And the universe is, at its base, fundamentally and essentially simple. And it's because in our minds we can't often reach that simplicity, but it is there, and the greatest physical discoveries come from that, I believe.
An example I like to give to the non-believers is tornadoes. Where does that energy come from that has horrendous destructive forces in it? It's that's the same kind of energy.
That's right.
That's right. And some of the signposts of what happened on 9/11 are very, very similar to what happens with tornadoes as well.
Right. Except what happened on 9/11 is just more organized. It had a discrete boundary of, you know, where it operated. It didn't go down the street wandering.
And while we're talking about the proof of free energy physics, we can also look at the ancient past. You know, we can look at the pyramids. We can look at the megalithic monuments that have been constructed in all places around the world, from Polynesia to the British Isles to China. Or Baalbek in Lebanon, places like this, which are, or the Coral Castle more recently in Florida, the project of a little man from Latvia. Ed Leedskalnin. If you want to look at that, this is all evidence that there has been a technology on this earth that is capable of erecting those structures, manipulating those massive blocks of stone somehow through the use of the physics of electromagnetism and gravity. And the proof is staring us right in our face. The great enigmas of the world are challenging us, just like 9/11 is challenging us, to face the reality, the physical reality, that this kind of science exists. Unfortunately, Tesla was right, and it has fallen into the hands of some of the wickedest and most deceitful and murderous people on the earth. But I would add to that that they may not be the only people on the earth right now who are holding the technology. So just because 9/11 shows that directed energy technology was used as a weapon of mass destruction does not mean that everyone on the planet who knows how to use this technology is going to be using it for that same purpose. So we've got to start looking at this whole situation a lot differently than we have up until now.
Yeah, and for the few people out there who haven't heard this presentation yet, take a listen to John's challenge to the Crop Circle Wizards. John, would you like to go on a bit about that, on the connection into the crop circles?
Well, I was inspired to do this challenge to the Crop Circle Wizards by Dr. Judy Wood's work and by reflecting on it over the previous months. Now, I would just point out to those who don't know this yet that there is a reference in her work to crop circles. And
Page 333.
And there is a study that needs to be made here, a more extensive study, but the preliminary facts are very clear. There are a number of distinct characteristics that occur in crop circles that also occurred in the physical phenomenon at ground zero, 9/11. For instance, the presence of these iron-rich spheres, they are found in crop circles. The way that a crop circle appears to be produced by a template or a cutout. They appear to be cutouts that are somehow impressed upon the grain. Likewise, we find this same cutout phenomenon, which is totally inexplicable by thermite controlled demolition, by the way. This same cutout phenomenon in the ruins of 9/11. And so let's just say that the same physics, principles of physics, and the same technology were in use. And they are here demonstrated in two very different ways.
That's right. And it's probably the reason why thermite was chosen as the weapon of choice for the cover-up, because they needed something to explain the occurrence of these tiny iron balls and aluminum balls that they find in the microscopic level.
Oh, exactly. It's a very clever...
I've got a question. What you mean by thermites? They talk about thermitic material. And I'm wondering what they're really just referring to, because they aren't saying thermite. They're saying thermitic material now, lately, you know. That's mm-hmm. the latest version. And I'm wondering, do they mean powdered aluminum and powdered iron rust? There's no doubt that would be there, because that's what the buildings were made out of.
Mm-hmm.
And the buildings were turned to dust. The buildings were just steel frame structures with aluminum cladding, and steel is 98-99% iron. You turn that into nano-sized dust, you have nano-sized iron rust and nano-sized aluminum dust.
That's right, and the people who did the operation must certainly have known that. I'm going to assume that they were not chemically, ignoramuses, and they must have known that thermite, this invention of this term, thermite as a military explosive, has similar properties. And so it's a really clever switch. It's a really clever
switch. And it's not an explosive.
No, it's not.
It burns. It burns things. And yeah, the military uses it to melt cannons and to burn paper.
That's right. It burns things. So it's not even an explosive. But because it has these chemical properties, it could be switched and replaced to be a substitute for what the real evidence is showing. So it's very, very clever. It's not an accident that somebody came up, Mr. Jones or whoever is behind Mr. Jones, and started talking about thermite. It's no accident.
Yeah, they're very clever on one level, but on another one, they're very ignorant of how this truth is going to come out. You can't keep that lie up forever.
As long as it's long enough just to run out the clock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it's been 10 years, yeah.
That's right.
And I think that the 10 years is a magical date, and I think they're trying to seal the lid on this cover-up at this anniversary.
I get the same feeling that they're trying to do that. And at the same time, I get the feeling that there is enough of an awareness that there's something wrong with the game and there's something wrong with their argument. Well, the way they treat you, Dr. Wood, is alerting a lot of people to the fact that there's something wrong with their argument, They can't win either way. If they insult you and ridicule you and refuse to consider your work, they are going to be exposing themselves by that very attitude, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And someone recently pointed out that what reason do people have to attack me?
Right.
To try to debunk my work? Unless it's something they have an emotional investment in, or there's something they're trying to cover up.
That's right.
If something doesn't make sense, you move on. You don't attack it. You don't want to give it that much time and attention.
Right. The one thing that we infer very strongly, Dr. Wood, from the way you're treated is that you are certainly not irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Actually, I have to, give thanks and acknowledgments to certain people who helped direct me to exactly what was important to look at because of how badly they attacked it. The Greg Jenkins event where, nothing went up, all went down, you're an idiot for thinking it goes up. Oh, and it was all very coarse. It wasn't fine. Please, just trust me, it wasn't fine. So, it went up and it was fine. Those are important. Okay.
So by their very attacks, they reveal the thing they want to try to cover up.
Exactly. They're dead center over the crosshairs of, the center of it all. And it actually has been quite easy for me to see where people are because the opposition is willing to give up anything but this. So they give up, all sorts of various other secrets to lure people in, but they won't give this up. So when I talk with anyone, a friend of mine jokingly refers to me as holy water, like what you flick on someone to see if they're a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
They mention my name, and the reaction you get from people tells you, where they stand, how open-minded they are, or if they're really interested in the truth.
That is so true. You're holy water. Yeah, it really does work. Well, would either of you like to add anything else on to this part of the conversation about the connection into free energy?
Except that now that it's revealed, mm-hmm. As long as the whole world is aware of it, that means the people who are developing it in secret can now do it in broad daylight once everybody knows about it. If everyone really is aware of the fact that free energy technology exists, then everyone is free to develop it.
I
think we'll see a lot more.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that today, Dr. Wood, in anticipation of this conversation. I'd just like to say briefly what my reflection on this is. It relates very closely to some things I said in my challenge to the crop circle wizards, as I call them. As you know, that's just a term that I invented that I designate by those people who are or may be holding this technology and know it and want to use it for peaceful purposes. It's perfectly understandable, considering what happened to Tesla and a number of other people through history in the 20th century who've been shut up or murdered, that these people would not want to come out in the open and risk their lives. But the odds are much better now if they come out in the open. Due to 9/11 and due to what you have shown about 9/11, giving proof to the entire world that this energy exists, you've changed the odds of the game. And they might, their lives may still be in danger. It certainly is true that there is a battle going on this planet over who's going to hold this technology and what they're going to use it for. And we'd be naive if we didn't realize that we were in that battle, whether we like it or not. But the odds of the battle have been changed now. And those, I agree with you, Dr. Wood, that those who are holding that technology can come forth and they will be embraced and surrounded by countless numbers of people who will receive them. And I can't guarantee that they could be protected or that any of us could be protected in this game. But the chances of them coming forth and actually offering to humanity what they hold for humanity are much, much greater, and they're getting better every day.
The listeners may probably start wondering at this point why I'm still alive. I think it's a fluke. I think that they underestimated me. Yeah, you know, my student was murdered, and it looked too suspicious if I was murdered too.
Certainly.
And I think it's easier to marginalize women, and in our culture, for some reason, and also being by myself, that it made it easier. And I think they're counting on that. But
I think they were counting on using you alive to discredit yourself, as it were, by the various attacks or things they do. It's very difficult to tell what is going on in the mind of insane and murderous people who are out to deceive the entire world. But the fact that they have left you alive is very good fortune for all of us. And I think that there is a kind of game they play. And I think you're absolutely right, Dr. Wood. They didn't see you coming. They underestimated you, and they don't quite know where you fit into their game. And, you know, they're funny people. Unless they know exactly, this is my understanding of their psychology, unless they know exactly how they are threatened, or unless they know exactly how they can profit from snuffing someone off, they don't do it, because they operate on very rigorous terms in their own insane minds. So that's right.
and if they murder somebody, then it starts brings more attention to it.
It really does. It's always a big risk they face, that it will bring enormous attention to the message and the truth that that person is carrying. And
Yeah, and your approach of putting your work out on the internet bit by bit as it came up was also a very good way to avoid being taken out of the picture, because it's already out, yeah.
Dead people keep secrets.
That is true.
That's
so
true.
I didn't want to be one of those, so I wasn't going to keep any secrets.
All right, well, we have about, I'd say, 10 or 15 minutes in this first part of the recording, so let's go ahead and go on to the next question.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. So,
because I think we covered number 5 already, Thomas.
Okay. You want to go on to question number 6? Okay.
I think so. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Number 3.
Yeah. Let's go back to number 3 here, and then we can go on to 6. So you say that, Dr. Wood, your scientific analysis. You okay, John?
Yeah, sure. That's a good idea.
Okay. So your scientific analysis is about the how and the what, not the who. But you did also indicate the who and who would know about this kind of technology? Could you kind of explain that point that you made before?
Well, you first need to start with what happened. You need to determine what happened before you can determine how it happened. And, of course, you need to determine what and how before you can determine who did it, because otherwise it's who did what? What did they do? And a perfect example is this recent big hoopla in the media about Casey Anthony. They were convincing the television viewing audience, apparently, that she was guilty and really promoting that big time. Meanwhile, in the trial, they weren't able to convince the jury of that. And she came back with a not guilty verdict, and so many folks were outraged, saying, wrong decision, we got to go attack the jury. And the next day they had this wonderful juror, Jennifer, I forgot her last name, on the media the next day, and she said it beautifully. She said, well, we don't know how the child was murdered. We don't know how the child died. If you don't know how the child died, how can you find someone guilty for it? What was the act? What was the crime? If you don't know what the crime is, you can't charge somebody with it. So you first need to determine how the child died. And that wasn't covered in the trial. They didn't determine what the crime was. With 9/11, did the towers turn to dust? Were they have bombs in them or what? How do you know who did it? 9/11 truth movement was saying is inside job. Well, that means they know who did it. How do they know who did it before they know what it was? Until you've determined what the crime is, you can't charge anybody for it. Not only what the crime is, but how it was done. That's sort of part of what happened. So those are the first steps, and that's what I had done. I determined what happened, how it happened, some type of energy weapon, and I know those who helped cover it up. Those are the contractors on the NIST report. Some of them are familiar with energy weapons. They develop and manufacture energy weapons. It was one of them that also has a contract with the government, U.S. government, to know who is developing, anywhere is developing such weaponry, any weapon of mass destruction, who has developed it. So not only would they know what weapon it was, but they would pretty much know whose weapon it was, because if they know who's developing whatever, they would know what the capabilities are of various entities. So that's why I went after them. But I think it's so important to first figure out what happened. And before you start jumping to conclusions, because if you start with who did it, who did what, and then you're going to back up for whatever witch hunt story you need, instead of looking at physically what happened in an unbiased way, because that'll bias your observations. You say, well, if so-and-so did it, and so-and-so isn't capable of X, Y, and Z, so therefore it couldn't have been done with X, Y, and Z. So you're already biasing those observations.
Yeah, could I jump in here for a minute?
Sure.
I'd like to say to those people who still have trouble thinking that it could have been done by directed energy weapons, and who have trouble believing that these weapons exist, go to Dr. Wood's website, to the page, which is jaw-dropping, which has evidence which is not evidence that she has concocted. It's nothing speculative. It's actually taken from the website of ARA, and also from this other organization. What is it called? NEPS?
FAIC? Directed Energy Professional Society.
Yeah, the DEPS. Have you ever heard of the DEPS, folks? The Directed Energy Professional Society?
I've never heard of that.
It really exists. And if directed energy doesn't exist, and if it's just a fiction, then how come there's a directed energy professional society that is linked to a whole number of government contracting agencies from every name that you can think of, such as Halliburton or Boeing or all the great companies and corporations that deal with the military and contract to the military are in this club of the Directed Energy Professional Society. I mean, is this something out of a science fiction writer, or does it really exist? Well, I didn't even know it really existed until I saw the documentation for it on Dr. Wood's site. So if you're wondering about, you know, whether this kind of energy really exists or not, apparently there are a lot of people and corporations in the military and corporate structure who absolutely do believe it exists. And as Dr. Wood said, they ought to have been able to tell us who did this or who holds the devices capable of doing this. And they completely betrayed the trust of the American public in their role of consulting for the NIST, the NIST report, in that they didn't do that. You say they didn't do that because they didn't want to point the finger at those people. But we're not that far away from seeing who they are. One thing that continually encourages me about Dr. Wood's work is that although it doesn't say who did it, it makes it possible for us to seriously undertake finding out.
Yeah, I don't know who did it, but I know who knows.
Right. Who knows? And that is not something that only you should know, Dr. Wood. It's not something that you alone should know. Any reasonable, sober person who is willing to spend some time investigating it can come to the same conclusion. So this is absolutely a key point. Now, this gets to another part of this conversation, which we have on the agenda, which I would like to perhaps move to as we move into the second hour here. We're just at 55 minutes. And that is the blame factor as it stands in the current 9/11 scenario, that is to say the inside job factor.
Mm-hmm.
I would like at some point to discuss that because that's my falls into my field of expertise, which is narratives and myths. The story of it's an inside job is a myth. So let's look at how that myth is constructed, and then we can understand something about the PSYOPs that is still operating on us, the PSYOPs that was perpetrated at the same time as these horrific murders were perpetrated. Could we sort of go in that direction?
Yes, Dr. Wood, if you're okay with that, let's go ahead and start going in that, and if we can't finish it in the first hour, we'll pick it up in the second.
Sure. Could I start?
Please.
Sure.
From my experience of what I've seen, you know, people ask me to speculate. I said, well, you know, I don't, you know, can't speculate exactly who did it. I know who knows who did it, but, you know, well, it would take thousands of people, so therefore it didn't happen. I don't say it takes thousands of people. I've been to visit John Hutchison. I've seen how he can cause the same effect on a much smaller scale, but he's one person plugged with his system plugged into a, you know, 110 outlet. So it's not that big of a thing. It's just it's the magic of being able to unlock the door to this energy system. So let's say somebody knows how to do this. Let's say it's also a group of, you know, a handful of people, you know, four, five, six people, somewhere around there, who decide they want to take over the United States. And they don't just go in the front door because the U.S. military will come get them. And that's kind of stupid. But then they know somebody who has this type of device that can dustify the towers and hold a gun to their head or bring them into their club or whatever they need to do and dustify the towers. Then they start a truth movement. And they get everyone in the truth movement to hate their government, to destroy their government from within.
Mm-hmm.
And get them to hate their government so badly they want any government but the one they have. And then this handful of four or five or six people walk in the front door and they're welcome with open arms. That is what I kind of see as a strong possibility.
Indeed.
It may not be five or six, but it may be, you know, seven or eight or somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could, with that technology, you could just hold the gun to the head of anybody and say, you know, pay up or this is what we'll mm-hmm. do. We'll take out Champs-Élysées or we'll take out, Big Ben. As a show of what we can do, yeah.
Right. Well, I more or less follow that scenario. I'd like to flesh it out a little more if I can, because I've been
sure.
giving this a great deal of thought over the last few days. Now, I'd just like to spring something on your minds as a kind of a teaser to start with. Just imagine, you know what it is to frame someone, okay? We all know the story. We've seen the detective films many times. A man doesn't kill his wife. Somebody does. But he's framed for the murder of his wife, okay? Mm-hmm. We've seen that story in the plot many times, right? Let me give you another plot. How about a man kills his wife, and then he's framed for what he actually did? Did you ever hear that story?
Run that by me again.
Someone framed for a murder they actually committed. They're framed for something that they actually did.
Here's an example of that I've often used. That why I say you have to determine what happened before you can determine who did it, how they did it and who did it, before you can arrest him for the crime. So let's say you have somebody standing over a dead body. With a smoking gun. And
right.
So you haul him into court and charge him with death by gunshot. Turns out they killed the person, but they poisoned him. So
right.
So there's no bullet hole in the body. The guy gets off, and due to double jeopardy, he can't be tried again.
There you go. That's right. So let's say that some clever twist like that, either the example that I gave, someone who is framed for something they actually did, and then they have a clever lawyer come in and say, oh my God, you were framed, and they get them off from something they did because it makes them appear as if they were framed and thereby innocent. That plot and the plot that Judy Wood just described, and let's consider that something like that plot happened at 9/11, and it's part of the PSYOPs. And as long as we're caught in the PSYOPs, we're never going to see it. We have to step outside of it. And the big difference, and this is the most important thing I want to say this evening, just about the most important thing, is the big difference between Dr. Wood's argument on evidence of what happened in 9/11 and the truth movement inside job argument. Dr. Wood's argument is pure science. It doesn't contain an accusation, but the truth movement inside job, which purports to be based on science, purports to be based on architects and engineers and scientists looking at the evidence, does point to a perpetrator. And therefore, it is not pure science, you see.
Mm-hmm.
It is part of the PSYOPs, because the PSYOPs wants us to look at a certain perpetrator. It wants to frame someone, namely the United States government. But the twist in this story that I'm asking you now to consider is that the perpetrators who were framed actually did what they were framed for, but they didn't do it in the way that they thought they were going to do it.
Hmm.
And it's in deconstructing how these events took place on that day, in deconstructing how they took place, we can deconstruct the PSYOPs and get the PSYOPs out of our own minds. The great problem with people recognizing Judy Wood's work, which is truth as clear as crystal water from a spring. Why is it so muddled and so difficult to see this? Because our minds are still in the fog and confusion of the PSYOPs. And the only way we can get out of it is by deconstructing it. And that's what I would like to try to do a little bit this evening. It's the first time I've ever publicly attempted to do this. I'd like to run it by both of you and see what you think of it just as it comes forth.
Well, yeah, I'm very intrigued. I like the way you're going there, and it seems to fit in with how Dr. Wood has laid things out as well. Now, would you two like to go ahead and shut it down for the first hour and pick this up on the second?
Yeah, I hear somebody has a bandwidth issue or something. I don't know who. Maybe it would be good for us all to reboot.
Okay. Let's do that in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
It'll probably take about 10 minutes, actually, to reboot everything and to save this file.
Okay.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, so I'll call you back in about 10 minutes then.
Yeah, great.
Excellent.
Okay,
thanks.
Very
bye
good.
Bye.